Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for coming along today. I didn't mind having my name on the event title slide, but I felt it would be entirely inappropriate to remove Mike's name from this slide. So just pretend I'm Mike Campbell, but a better looking version. And I'll try and do my best to stand in for the messages Mike wanted to send. Why are we here? What's this about? Why did we feel it was appropriate to bring so many leading thinkers from around the world and around the UK together to actually talk about skills? I remember Barry Shearman as chairman of the Employment and Skills Select Committee, when that's what it was called, saying to me once that when he held hearings on schools and universities, the queue for the public gallery was out the door of the house and round the corner. When he held a hearing on skills, he was lucky if he got two people and a stray dog. Well, the nice thing about skills is that it has moved up the agenda in the UK quite dramatically since those days when Barry was chair. And in a way, I think this event, from our perspective, tries to mark out that difference. We know that there are big challenges and big opportunities around the economy of the UK, the opportunity that the UK presents. And, you know, some very, very simple headlines, which for me just spell out why this is so important, is that very simple calculation that in the context of the UK, and similar calculations would apply in other nations, each 1% increase in both employment and productivity, in each, not and but or, is worth around £20 billion to the UK economy. £20 billion I'd like to see in there, given the scale of our debt. £20 billion that I think our kids would like to see in there, given the tax burden they're likely to face in the future. And it's important that we do everything in our power to make that happen. More than that, we know that training each 300,000 workers adds about £8 billion to the economy, and raising skills as a part of that actually has a positive impact on both productivity and employment opportunities for everyone. So this stuff matters. It's not just an esoteric, theoretical or policy debate. Policy in the skills arena has a genuine and substantial impact. And part of the purpose of this event is to try and help inform all of those who have a role in making that a reality, learn from best practice, both internationally and from policy thinkers in the UK. And the truth of it is, of course, that in trying to deal with this, every nation, and we had had an opportunity to talk to some of our speakers to find how amazingly common our agenda is. Every nation in the world is starting to find substantial changes in the way in which the whole of their economy and their society is changing. The sort of demand and the power of consumerism, led in part by the opening up of the internet to online commercial activity on a global scale. The range that technology is playing, not just in transforming those experiences, but in fact of modernizing and transforming every aspect of industry, providing real tensions as well as opportunities in the balance between labour-rich and technology-rich nations, and helping to shape but also challenge the balance across the global economy. All of that, of course, in an environment in which there is no such thing, in most cases these days, as national economies. All of us, to some greater or lesser extent, affected by globalisation. Many of us also feeling the impact of demography in a way that is extraordinarily varied across the world. The UK facing a substantial decline in our new entrants to the workforce, our 15 to 24-year-olds, over the next decade due to a significant fall in the birth rate in the 90s. A real impact in China on the birth rate because of one child, one family policies, very necessary in the context of helping to stabilise China's economy. But then we see high birth rates continuing in Africa, in India, in parts of South America, to the point where India has actually implemented a policy to train almost 50 million people to leave India, to fill up some of the gaps they believe are going to appear in labour markets and skills requirements around the world. The environmental impact, requiring us to re-engineer our thinking in so many industries, but also re-engineer our attitudes and our personal behaviours in order to ensure that not just what we do in our home lives, but the way in which we conduct business is increasingly environmentally sustainable. We're also seeing real changes in values amongst youth. Young people taking very different views of the world than previous generations. I think this is true in every generation. In this case, we're seeing a much stronger focus on participation and contribution in many parts of society, whilst other parts of the young are increasingly alienated. And if anything, we're seeing a polarisation of attitudes and values, which really does require us to join up our society still more. And finally, real questions about governance, governance at the level of companies and organisations, governance at the level of areas and communities, governance at the level of nations and globally. Governance coming under increasing challenge for its values, its ethics, its practices, its engagement, its methodology for allowing citizens to actually control their destiny or not. All of these things having a big impact on the way in which employers and people behave and the extent to which we are creating the sort of society we need to have. Now, when we look at skills, certainly in the UK, but this is true, I think, of many nations, we've seen a time when skills were seen to be an issue of supply. That the big challenge was to ensure that the supply of skilled individuals at all levels that an economy needs, from sort of low skills, medium, high skills, that brings in both practical and academic learning, that inspires and supports research. There was a view, I think, that skills was essentially a supply side. How do we supply the right ones in the right volume? We believe this has increasingly become recognised as an incomplete view of the world. Scotland, in the context of the UK, probably the nation that first drew attention to the challenges here, having spent 20 years raising the skills of their whole population at every level, primary, secondary, tertiary, postgraduate education, building a very successful participation and achievement rates amongst its population whilst its productivity went backwards. But equally, we are seeing similar patterns and similar policies expressed in New Zealand through their skills strategy, in Australia, in many parts of Europe, certainly in Canada and to a degree in the US, where one of the big challenges that we're having to face increasingly is that just supplying skills is not sufficient. Necessary to ensure effective economic growth, but not sufficient. It's as well as increasing and creating the people with the skills, we need to make sure that the jobs are in place to do that. The purpose of skills policy isn't simply to create a more highly educated population, it's to have a genuine and positive impact on employment, on productivity, and on reducing inequality. And it's the combination of getting those three elements right that really is the hallmark of a successful economic and skills policy. And in our view, the evidence is increasingly showing that that requires looking very hard at the demand side, at the behaviour of employers themselves. The real issue is to make sure that our businesses are world class. They are actually keeping track with, they're moving up the value chain, they're keeping track with competitor nations, and that our place in the different aspects of industries and the economies of the world continues to be strong. This is the driving force for almost every nation that is looking at the role skills will play in their future economy. How do we ensure that our businesses seek to be as ambitious and remain competitive with the rest of the world? And how do we ensure then that we actually create the right match between the demand for skills of our employers and the increasing ambition and entrepreneurial spirit that will drive our continued economic success, with the supply of skills from our people that will increase the meaning that their life brings to them and the opportunity for social success and progression, reducing poverty and inequality at the same time. We know what happens if we get it right, but the price for getting it wrong can be felt in many ways as well, and I know all the nations here are concerned about looking at how we address some of those. At one end, you can have skill shortages and skills gaps. That's a sign of undersupply of the right skills. But equally, there's evidence that getting it wrong can produce both unemployment and motivate economic inactivity amongst too many of the population. And finally, increasing evidence in many nations of overskilling, as it's sometimes called, much more relevantly underemployment, where people with skills, high skills, are not finding it possible to get the jobs that they want for the future. And we're certainly seeing, in the context of the UK success on the economic stage, a real issue about the rate at which we are currently producing high-skilled jobs to use the high-skilled people that we're producing. And finally, an element and a dimension that is increasingly rearing its head in many nations, the issue of migration. As a migrant, I sit here feeling very glad that Britain had a positive and open migration policy. So don't in any way doubt my support for that, because I wouldn't be here without it. But equally, we know that there was concern at the Edinburgh G8 from the developing nations, extremely worried that the developed countries were taking their high-skilled people to fill their high-skilled gaps, taking away from those nations the very people they need to build their stronger economy for tomorrow. So how do we get this right? India overproducing because it knows it has a population it can't offer appropriate employment to, other nations feeling the pain of skills migrating out to the Western and developed world and holding back their potential for economic growth. These are really complex issues that have not just economic impact, but serious social impact and can be quite divisive in terms of the way their policies are implemented. In terms of the things that are making a difference and the big discussions, the hot topics, if you like, at the moment, there are a number of them. In many nations around the world, we see people wrestling with the issue of how you measure the value of your skills system. Is it on the basis of the number of people that enter learning? Is it in the basis of the number of people who pass courses? Or if, as we're increasingly finding, increasing numbers of people not being able to get jobs despite having intermediate and higher level skills because of a mismatch between what they have and what the demand's for, to what extent should we be actually assessing the effectiveness of our system on their outcomes, on the extent to which individuals get the employment opportunities they want, on the extent to which industry gets the skilled people it needs, on the extent to which our economy actually gets the beneficial impact of the investment in skills? And if that's the case, how do we manage a system by completely changing the way in which we measure its success? Certainly in this nation, but I suspect in many others, the outcome of the recession has had a major impact on the availability of public funding. The UK is certainly going to feel a significant fiscal squeeze over the next few years, but actually many other nations are facing similar challenges. And how do we ensure that with the available public funding that we have, we get the best value for money? And more than that, we maximise the flow of public funding in tighter times to the learning and development that actually happens on the ground, ensuring funding reaches the front line and maximising the impact it can have by producing the very skills we're seeking. Very serious issues in this around how you change behaviour. Many skills expectations are about culture. They're about people's expectations. They're about people's expectations about who pays, expectations about what opportunity you have, expectations about what you should be able to attain in working opportunities with the skills you've attained, and the extent to which changing behaviour is no longer effectively being delivered through command and control from the centre, and an increasing focus around the world on looking and understanding how incentives can work. Carefully managed, simple, straightforward incentives. The whole philosophy of nudge, for those that have read the book on the topic, the way in which you can simply apply simple steers, simple taps to a system to increase the extent to which it changes in the appropriate direction, rather than sort of big, sort of, and typically quite expensive, autocratic and central control processes. And to what extent can we use the people who are part of the system in networks to actually seriously change the way in which we behave through self-learning, self-assessment, and self-development? Real issues about priorities for action, particularly at a time when public funding is actually a tight issue. Who should we prioritise? To do what? Where? In what way? How you actually set priorities for action are increasingly a critical issue. And certainly, we believe, certainly in the UK, a real issue overall about who pays. We know that the total cost of all the lifelong learning that our young people and adults would need to ensure a sustainable economy is going to cost far more than any government will ever pay. A conference in Finland a few years ago estimated it would take between 10 and 11% of GDP if the state had to bear the full cost, and I suspect there's no country in the world who's planning to put their education spending up to that level. So how do we address the question of who pays and how much they pay? How do we understand the tensions that happen in the labour market? How do we actually understand the differences between the skills available and the skills required between supply and demand? The extent to which people are underemployed or overemployed, that there are skill shortages and skills gaps in the economy, those are the ways in which economies can show different aspects of mismatch. Mismatches in different nations and in different parts of nations, in different communities, can be very different. And we believe that understanding that and addressing both sides of the mismatch possibilities is essential if you're actually going to produce a sustainable economic impact over an extended period of time. So, on to this event. Those are the sorts of questions we're wrestling with. And in the United Kingdom, there are a whole set of players who, in my view, are the audience for this event today. They do include the Commission itself. You'll find, aside from opening and closing statements on the days, we're not making inputs to this event because we're here to learn. But in terms of the way in which the system works, any skills system works, employers, individuals, providers and communities play incredibly important parts. One of the key roles in this United Kingdom that's played in this area are through our sector skills councils. Their biggest role to help assess and understand the extent of skills, needs and opportunities over the next decade and to bring those to our attention. And indeed, in 5 weeks' time, the Sector Skills Councils and the Commission will be publishing its first annual strategic skills audit, painting, we hope, a good, clear picture of what the future skills requirements of the UK will need. But we're not going to talk about that today because that's for 5 weeks from now. The purpose of today is for us, people from trade unions and other organisations who represent the issues, interests of individuals, people from universities, colleges and other training providers who play a key role in helping to deliver the skills we need, and communities and nations, not just the level of national governments, but the level of regions and sub-regions of cities and communities, to what extent do they have a part to play? For us, this process of assessment, advising employees and individuals on choices, helping to set the agenda of providers and universities, and helping nations and communities advocate the right skills mix for their communities, this totality of partnerships and networks, this is the audience for this event today. We are the majority of people in this hall, with the exception, of course, of our speakers. And that, for me, is really what today and tomorrow is about. We're here in large part to listen. We are here to ensure that as far as possible in developing the activities of the UK in relation to skills over the next 3 to 5 years, we've had some of the best insights from international policy and best practice that we can get. We're here to try and ensure that those lessons are heard. We hope for all of our international speakers the networking opportunities here and the ability to learn from other international colleagues and from practice in the UK will be a reward to you for your time and effort to take back to your nations. But we'll be quite honest and blatant from you. We expect to learn more. And for that reason, I'm extremely grateful to such an extraordinary cast of both international and UK speakers who have agreed to join us. I promise you that the Commission, and I believe it's as true of our sector skills councils, our colleges and training providers, our trade unions and our employer organisations, that this really is a shared agenda in which your help and your advice is critically important. For those of you who haven't seen it, we've been spreading the word far and wide, naming many of our speakers personally, of course, but actually drawing attention to the opportunities for participation outside this room and around the United Kingdom by a large numbers of people that couldn't make it here today. And for your contribution as speakers to helping us get this right, and to the whole audience's contribution for your participation in the dialogues and discussions, networks and working groups that happen here today, our gratitude and thanks, because I do hope that those of us who have to go away from this event to help shape the future of employment and skills in the UK will have learned so much that you will honestly have had a major impact on what we say and do in the future. So thank you very much for your time.